You ready? You ready to talk about Lethal Weapon?
I am.
Do you have... I'm going to ask you why you picked this. You're going to go, it's Lethal Weapon, man.
You betcha.
It's
Mel Gibson.
It's Mel Gibson.
What do you expect him to say?
What else is there to say?
Hello and welcome to The Greaties, the great 80s movie debate where we see if the movies of the 1980s still hold up today. If you're a child of the 80s, a fan of classic films, or just a movie geek, you've come to the right place. The focus of today's podcast is 1987's Lethal Weapon, directed by Richard Donner, and starring Mel Gibson, Danny Glover, and Gary Busey. My name is Dave. Our illustrious panel of 80s experts includes Christy.
What's that, Amata? That's an ugly spot.
Matt.
I deserve to be blown first before the fucking jacuzzi, okay? I'll burn the goddamn house down, but blow me first.
And Chris. Oh. We like to start every show by having each panelist reflect on their past experiences with the movie we're discussing so we can see where everyone is coming from. So, Christy, what is your history with Lethal Weapon?
I do believe that I saw this on TV when they put it on TV for the first time, like CBS or one of those channels.
And would you care to tell everyone how you've seen it this time? How you were able to see it, I should say.
I have my own copy, thanks to Chris Irons, because he sent it to me.
That
for
is
my
awesome.
Birthday. Not just one, but all four.
Happy birthday to Christy.
Yeah.
Well, Matt, what about you?
Well, I never heard of Mel Gibson until he released these comedy monologue tapes he recorded on the phone last year. Then I had to learn all about him.
Here we go.
actually, I saw the second one first. A friend of mine bought it when it was finally came out on video, and he's like, let's watch it. I'm like, okay. I thought that was really cool. And then I think, in a week later, I finally rented the first one. So it was, I guess that was probably... I'm going to guess 3-4 years after this was released, maybe even in the early 90s, but did see it on video was my first viewing.
Well, I'm going to go next on this one, and I actually did the same exact thing. I saw part 2 first, and then had to play catch up with getting back into Lethal Weapon, because we've mentioned a few times that at least Chris, Matt, and I all worked at a movie theater, and I remember coming home from college the summer that Lethal Weapon 3 came out, which I believe was 1992. Is that right, Chris? Lethal Weapon 3?
I want to say 9. Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
Yeah.
And remembering that I felt like I should see, the entire series leading up to Lethal Weapon 3. So I saw them out of order like Matt did. But knowing Chris, like anyone does, you cannot avoid knowing something about Lethal Weapon. And for that, let's go to Chris. Chris, this was your panelist pick.
Yes, it was.
And I'm surprised it took you this long to even get here. Tell us your history with Lethal Weapon.
I didn't want to rush into it. You know what's weird is I hate to say this, but I think I did the same thing. I saw 2 first.
Oh, wow.
I really don't.
I guess that.
Do you know why? I don't remember seeing this in theaters. Maybe I saw it on HBO or Prism. I don't remember. I honestly don't remember. But after I did see it, I saw it 5,000 times afterwards.
Okay. And was this, now we did, this is our second Mel Gibson. We did The Road Warrior and talked a lot about him then. But was this your real first Mel Gibson thing, or was it Road Warrior?
No, it was this one. It was, Road Warrior I probably saw, a few times and that was it. But once I saw Lethal Weapon, I was fucking hooked immediately. I think 14 years old when this thing came out. So maybe I was 15, 16, the prime age of a teenager, seeing the best action buddy cop movie of all time.
All right. Well, I know this is going to come up probably throughout the podcast. And maybe we should just kind of get it out of the way.
Please do.
Chris has an undying love of Mel Gibson.
And I always will.
And
what would that ask? Who couldn't?
Well, he does have, that's one of my jokes of his. He always has that famous Mel Gibson ass shot in every movie.
Yep. So really the first times you see him, even in this, you see his booty.
Yes.
But you have been able to, and some people can do this and some people can't. There are people in show business that you latch onto for whatever reason, and they turn out to be scumbags. Now, for you, this has happened a lot. I don't know.
like Arnold, I guess.
Yeah.
See, I wasn't even thinking about him.
Who else? Oh, yeah, who else on the list?
Well, you got your favorite actor is Mel Gibson.
Yeah.
Your favorite musician, is it not Michael Jackson?
Yes.
Okay.
Is there proof of what he did, supposedly did?
Who's your favorite athlete?
I think your favorite historic character was Hitler, am I right?
Yeah. I was going to say,
Nine!
Who's your favorite athlete? O.J. Simpson?
You were there.
Okay. Well, and there are people that in the show business world, you know, your Woody Allen type guys, that you can separate their personal life from, you know, the job they do on the screen. Like them, not like them, whatever. I find it hard to do that with some people. And this Mel Gibson stuff, I'm a pretty big Mel Gibson fan, and I struggle with it. And you never do you?
No, I don't.
Okay.
Well, because, you know, people are going to laugh at what I'm going to say. But people say shit. You say stuff. I say stuff. Stuff.
Not like
no.
that.
No.
But nobody knows that because you're not famous. You're not followed. You're not recorded. You're not taped. I mean, I'm not saying you guys. I'm saying people in general have done
it. I do not say the things he said on that tape, regardless of who knows me.
But that's the liquor talking and drinking. I mean,
I've been pretty drunk and have not said that stuff. I've been real drunk and not said that
stuff. Well, maybe not. All right. You're the percentage.
And
the
to
exception.
That?
Oh, that's right. Sugar tits.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'm sure
that might be the closest thing to anything I've ever said.
To a cop.
And I was probably talking about myself.
Is this true? Okay. It's all whatever. He does whatever. I mean, I don't agree with it, but it doesn't take away his awesome characters on screen.
Well, that I agree with.
Sure.
And you're able to separate. And I admire you for that. But you take it a step further and you defend not only his on-screen but his off-screen antics. I mean, the man is a scumbag.
Why? Why is he a scumbag? That's his opinion.
Okay.
People have their opinions.
Okay.
Right?
Well, all I know is that I've known Chris since we were little boys. And
one of you still is.
Correct.
And I remember I got my first car and Chris got his first car.
I forgot about this.
We live in Pennsylvania, and in Pennsylvania you only need a back license plate, so your front license plate is reserved for something incredibly stupid. And mine was Elvis 1. It was
I remember that
mock Tennessee license plate with the word Elvis on it. And Chris, what was yours?
I went to the Franklin Mills Mall. I remember this, at Franklin Mills Mall, and had a license plate made up that said Lethal Weapon, and I swear to God, right next door was like a Sam Goody or a Suncoast. I went over there and asked them if I could borrow their Lethal Weapon box, bring it over so they could make it exactly how it looked on the box. And then they did it.
This is custom made, right?
Custom made. I have it in the garage, actually.
Yep.
I am almost positive. I have to double check. I'm almost positive I have videotape of that from something we shot in the parking lot. I might be able to do a screen grab and put it on Facebook.
Oh my God.
I know I have a photo of it as well.
Oh, you got one? Okay, good.
Dude, really?
Hey, yeah. Honey, is that the same place you got your license plate?
No.
Oh, okay.
It was yours, Matt.
Never mind.
Come on.
That's a different podcast.
Yeah.
And it has nothing to do with movies.
Mm. Interesting.
Very, very interesting.
All right, well, let's get into the movie. Some people are listening to this. The five people that are listening to it are like, shut up and get to the movie.
That's right, yeah.
So let's get to it. And in case you had forgotten, this is a Christmas movie.
It is.
Chris, I've known you a long time. If it's Christmas time, what two movies do you have to watch before it's Christmas?
The two touching, feeling, heartwarming movies, Die Hard and Lethal Weapon.
Absolutely. Both.
Nothing screams family love and togetherness like Die Hard and Lethal Weapon.
Gather around the fireplace and pop in Die Hard.
All right. And we've talked, this is, I believe, our third Joel Silver movie now at this point.
Oh, good Lord.
And Chris and I have talked ad nauseum about Joel Silver. I think we should skip that on this. But if you want to hear two men gush over
he's a genius.
A bearded,
man
chubby.
Love.
Yes. I mean, we love Joel Silver. And this is a prime example why. But Richard Donner, this is our second Richard Donner film, as we did the Goonies.
Yeah.
And I was thinking about Richard Donner just in the 80s. He was really one of the greatest directors of that decade.
Yes.
I mean, if you're considering Superman 2 as being his film, especially since they released the Superman 2, his Superman 2 cut, the Goonies and this, he was huge and really does nothing anymore. Well, what's the last movie he did?
It wasn't a smash. I know that. It was like probably like one of those crappy action movies that came out.
I know he did a movie. It was with Paul Walker where there were time jumpers. I think it was called Timeline.
For real?
Oh, I think I remember that.
That's the last thing I remember him doing. I mean, I'm sure we could find out pretty easy, but he went from a guy that was just super impressive to, I don't know, hasn't done much. And maybe that's because he often teams with Mel Gibson. How many times they work together? All the Lethal Weapons,
Maverick,
Conspiracy Theory.
Yeah.
They work together a lot, and maybe the death of Mel Gibson's career had something to do with his. They're pretty good friends, I would think so,
yeah.
Well, the opening shot of this movie, to me, is just impressive right off the bat. You get that long shot over L.A., which I assume is done with a helicopter, and it goes right into the window of the girl that will then...
Which is Chris's favorite scene.
When you're 16? Hell yeah.
Or when you're 37?
Hell yeah.
There's a lot of jingle boobs. There's a lot of nudity in this movie right off the bat from the girl.
Maybe that's why I was hooked right away.
Well, half of it's
there.
Gibson.
You go.
This movie, as being a Christmas movie, says, yes, Chris, there is a booby clause.
I knew it.
So you get this guy, Shane Black. Now, you're a fan of his, but are you only a fan of his because of this, the screenwriter?
Yeah.
And he also did that, what's it called, Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, which was another pretty good on-screen.
You could see the Lethal Weapon chemistry in that movie, like trying to, like buddy cop kind of thing.
Right. I'm going to go out on a limb with Shane Black and say that he really got lucky with this. Because I was watching this and I told Chris, I've seen this movie a bunch of times. And if you would sat down with me and said, quick, what is Lethal Weapon about? Tell me the plot. I would have not been able to tell you. Because to me, the plot just kind of fades away into the rest of the movie. I think this Black guy just got lucky that he got two guys on screen that have unbelievable chemistry.
Yes, I do.
Yeah. I'm sorry, that sentence was weird. This Black guy was really lucky.
You can't tell me that he wrote all of their scenes together.
I think most of their scenes, to me, were always so like just ad-lib and just like just having fun.
Especially in 2 and 3.
Yeah. Later on, oh god, yeah, yeah.
So I think he gets credit for the screenwriting here. This is an actor's movie to me,
yeah,
and a director's movie. This guy wrote a story, and I think he just hit pay dirt with having two guys that were just unbelievable together.
One of the best actors that ever lived,
Danny Glover,
Gary Busey. No, I'm kidding.
Well, let's talk about Danny Glover. Was anyone else uncomfortable with the very first scene?
Yes. In the bathtub?
Yes.
Not at all.
That's family togetherness.
Yeah.
That's way too much family togetherness.
He supposedly is 50, but he's actually 40 in the first movie.
Yeah, I was reading that.
And I have to admit, I mean, I'm almost 40, and I wish I looked that good. He looked, like, not ripped or chiseled, but he looked lean.
Well, okay. I went from being uncomfortable with that scene to now being uncomfortable sitting next to you.
Yeah, I'm like, I don't even know.
He looked good for his age. I mean, he looked good.
Just, I can't imagine anybody. I just had this weird picture of Chris in a bathtub and the family coming in to sing him happy birthday, and I just got an uncomfortable feeling.
Yeah, it's weird.
I'm freaked out that Chris first noticed him enough to say that, and two, I disagree that he looked that good.
You think so?
Well, I mean, he didn't look bad, but it's not like that was a specimen of human physique that I was like, whoa, check that out.
Maybe because
he is no Carl Weathers.
Maybe because he was supposed to be 50, and maybe he was actually 40. That's why I thought he looked pretty good.
That's not good, then.
No, well, he looks like, I think he looked good. I would do him in the ass.
Okay.
What?
Is that Mel Gibson or
would
you?
Would you frolic in the ocean with him like Rocky did with
I would. Wear my short shorts, my half shirt.
What's the matter with you? Well, that scene is, I mean, it's not, he's in the bath, but it's not like a bubbly bubble bath.
No.
You can't see straight through that.
It's not like he grabbed a towel.
No, the teenage daughter and teenage son and the little girl are just right hovering over the water, kissing him on the cheek.
I didn't think of that, how awkward that was at all.
No?
No, I did not, no. I think Chrissy's right. It's just a family, just, you know. that's not on their mind, hopefully.
No, I didn't say that was normal, Chris.
Wait, what's... Yeah, I was like, wait, what just happened?
Well, that's what families do. People, you know,
What families do that?
Because it's not on their mind. You just run in there and give a kiss and leave. It's not like you're...
No.
They didn't run in there, give a kiss and leave. They ran in there, hung around. The teenage girl hung on the side of the bathtub for a couple minutes.
What's wrong with you people? What are you guys thinking when you're watching this shit? I don't get this.
I'm with Christy, man.
I'm not thinking that...
I'm a little weirded out.
Myrtle.
Danny Glover is pretty good looking. Like
for
you,
being 50? He looked pretty good.
He's not 50!
But that's the point of it.
But no, it's...
His character's 50 with a 40-year-old body.
Talking about whether or not Mel Gibson's a scumbag, that was a less frustrating conversation.
I love Mel Gibson.
But this was the first time that Danny Glover was on my radar, because the movies he was in before this weren't movies that teenagers were watching. Places in the Heart and The Color Purple.
Yeah.
Even Witness. He was in Witness, and I don't remember him in Witness.
Not at all.
This is his signature role.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Like Danny Glover, I looked at his career. It's other than this.
He used a lot to Mel and Donna.
Yeah.
I mean, big time.
Well, the even though the family thing is creepy, it sets up his family, which through all the Lethal Weapon movies is a huge part of it. And I know it's a part of all the movies that I've loved is his family life in that family setting. Is that one of the things that you love most about this movie?
I like the fact how Mel has no family, and you slowly see him changing in the movie, finally knowing that people out there care about him and like love him and stuff.
Right. He becomes a Murtaugh.
Yes. Only white.
All right. Well, you get Riggs in his butt, you know, the first time you see him. But it made me want to ask it, Matt and Christy, because I know what Chris and I watched. I didn't know this until I started watching it. I started watching the movie, and Chris had posted a scene on Facebook, a deleted scene that he really enjoyed. And I'm watching my movie, and this deleted scene is in the movie, along with many others. And it comes that I own, and I didn't know it, a director's cut of the movie.
Yes, so do I.
Is that what you watched?
Oh, I do?
You're welcome. You're welcome.
So when you...
That's why it took so long.
It is longer. It's seven,
it is.
It's 7 minutes longer. And I know that Chris and I think are going to disagree about this. And the first time you see Riggs really in the director's cut, there's this cut scene that is not in the theatrical version of him taking down a shooter in a schoolyard.
Yes.
Oh, that wasn't in the original?
No, not at all, Matt. Nope.
Huh. Interesting.
In the theatrical version, the first time you see him, you see his butt, and then you get that scene of him with the Christmas trees and the drug deal.
Yeah.
That's right really away. The first time you see Riggs in action. This whole alternate intro of the school shooter was not in the theatrical version, and that's what we all watched. Is that what I'm understanding?
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. What did Chris, you liked this scene.
I love that scene.
I hate it.
Why?
Oh, really? I liked it.
I hate it because...
Because the kids about or...
No. I think that... The thing that I know that you love about Mel Gibson, especially in this movie, is that you love Lethal Weapon 1 the most, because you've always told me you like this the most because he's the craziest in this movie.
Yes, because in part 4, when he becomes a family man, I lose interest.
Okay.
Yeah.
He slowly becomes domesticated, if you want to call that, through the movies. And in this one, you like him the most because
he's just fucking crazy. He don't care. He don't care if he lives or dies.
Okay, then I'm telling you right now, that scene, I'm glad they cut it, because when he walks up, I don't know if you watched it close enough, he walks up and...
He was going to leave at first.
It's not that he's even going to leave. He starts asking lots of questions. If you haven't seen the scene, it's on our Facebook page. And to me, it's unlike the character, and I'm glad they cut it out. Because the first scene that you usually see him in is with the Christmas tree, and he's nuts, like really nuts and great. Three Stooges nuts.
Yeah.
And in this scene, he walks up and he starts asking all kinds of questions. Do you remember he asked him?
But that's after he was going to leave.
But he starts asking the other cops, is he a good shot?
Is he shooting kids?
Is he shooting all over the place, or is he shooting in one place? He's asking a lot of questions about his own safety for a guy that's supposed to be borderline suicidal. That really isn't supposed to count.
That's a good point, Dave. Yes, it is.
And I'm glad they cut it out. Because
he kicks ass.
Here
we go.
It's a cool scene to watch him stand there and get shot around and then blow the guy away. But that whole lead up of him walking up the steps, concerned about his own safety, betrays his character.
That's a good point. I agree with that.
And really, they talk about this school scene a couple of times later. They even say something about somebody's like, oh, I heard that stunt you pulled. They're still talking about it later in the movie.
Right.
And at the beginning, if this is in there, like, I'm thinking, should I be focusing on this school shooter? Like, to me, it takes away from the already thin plot.
Right, yeah.
So I'm glad they, I think they made some good cuts in this movie. And I wish at this point that I did have the theatrical version. I assume you can still buy that, can't you?
I have it downstairs.
You have both copies?
Yes. I got like three copies of each movie.
This is like, he has it in Chinese.
Wait. You are not allowed to say anything. With all the copies of various copies of different movies you own. How many?
Xanadu the Glitter Edition.
How many copies of Clerks do we own? Mallrats, for God's sakes. We actually own more than one copy of Mallrats.
Wow.
Well, they had a 10th anniversary, damn it.
Yeah, well, you'll buy the 20th one, too, when that's out, I'm sure.
No.
25th.
No, 25th, maybe.
I'm not even supposed to be here today. Well, the real...
No, but it almost is embarrassing to have the Mallrats one.
Well, the real Riggs intro is the drug deal at the tree lot. And he is so great in any of these scenes where he can just cut loose and be nuts and maybe be himself. Who knows? I mean, that scene where the drug deal goes wrong and the guy's got the gun in his head. He's telling the guy to shoot him and he's seething.
Yeah.
With rage.
Breathing heavy?
Yeah, I mean, do you have your sound effects?
My phone's acting up. Yeah, I get it.
He's seething like he does on the phone.
It's called acting.
Well, he's not acting on the phone.
You don't know that.
You don't know he's not.
It's called a prediction.
It's called foreshadowing.
Foreshadowing. Is that your ringtone, Chris?
That's what he does in the movie. Right?
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's awesome.
It is awesome in the movie.
Yeah, it is.
I will say that. And that's followed by really one of my favorite all-time scenes in any movie, the suicide scene.
Yeah.
How great is that?
I remember when I watched that, I mean, later on. It's so awesome. It's so sad to see him. Like, he actually cries. I mean, he's crying.
Yeah.
He's one of the best. He can call me a whore any day of the week.
I just wish there were more pictures of her. It seems like there's only two pictures.
And I get mad at the point where he throws it down and you hear the glass break. Like, he breaks his picture frame of his wife.
Mm.
After he loves her so much.
Well, it just, Christy and I had a long back and forth about Stallone, and you know, I say like he's a good actor. Some people don't think he's a good actor. Steve was on, kind of saying things about like Schwarzenegger couldn't do the things that Stallone could do. And I'm going to take it further and say that Stallone can't do the things that Gibson can do.
Yes,
and this just shows his weight as an actor, his gravitas, if you want to call it that.
I mean, thank you, Kiefer.
Yeah.
Yes. To me, he's one of the greatest actors of the last three decades. And I'm not just saying that because Chris is my friend.
I can't say I disagree with you either. Because I do, as an actor, I have liked some of his stuff.
I'm impressed, Christy.
I really liked, what was it? The one where he's got a brain tumor or something.
Kindergarten Cop?
No, that's not it.
It's not a tumor. Right after.
Forever Young? Is that it?
Forever Young. That's it. That was the face one. Didn't he have
a man with two faces?
Man without a face. Yeah. Or the man with half a face.
I love Mrs. Sofil.
And the river's good, too.
And the bounty.
Oh, no.
Delta
I know
Force
what my
Z
favorite
or whatever that was.
My Back favorite was Gallipoli.
Gallipoli. Mm.
I love Gallipoli.
Or Tim. What was his first ones where he plays the mentally challenged person?
Well, you know because you are a Mel Gibson completist. You have every film he's ever done.
I do. Have I seen those movies? I don't think so.
You just buy them and store them away.
Yeah.
Which is strange.
Is that to impress him in case he happens to show up at the front door one day?
One day he will come here.
If he notices the plastic is still on it, he's not going to be impressed.
I'm not
start calling you names. These are wrapped up like a slutty whore.
It's just words. It don't bother me.
It's just words.
Well,
but they're fun to say.
They are.
there's something else. Like I said, I never really could remember the plot. And there's something else that I noticed in watching it this time for the first time. His captain is in his lovable captain that's in all the movies and is one of the Richard Donner players. He's in every Richard Donner movie, it seems. Did you get this scene where the psychologist played by Mary Ellen Trainer, who's also in every Richard Donner movie, Robert Zemeckis' ex-wife, I believe, she has always been a thorn in Riggs' side.
She has.
And in this movie, she at least seems very concerned about him.
She's warning him about just to keep an eye out.
Did you get that whole scene? It's very strange, and I never noticed this before. But
it's bad acting.
Okay, I wasn't even.
It's really bad wooden. You don't understand. I think he's suicidal.
Yeah,
like just very, like reading it off the page.
What
weird?
What came off strange to me, and I never noticed this before, because to me the captain has always been, even though he was troubled by Riggs and Murtaugh, has always been in their corner. In this case, he is.
He don't care about him.
Well, he's very almost accusing him of fraud. I wrote down the quotes. Mary Ellen Trainer, the psychologist, says to the captain, "Are you telling me that you think Riggs is playing some kind of a game?" And they're referring to his instability. And the captain says, "Sure, he wants the cash. I've seen it 100 times."
Right.
The captain is accusing him of faking.
I always thought he was saying it as a joke towards her. Because then he said, "Well, if you ask himself, I'm wrong." You know what I mean? I always thought he was like joking around with her just to like shut her up.
Right.
Yeah.
I never noticed this scene before, and I don't know if it was another cut scene, but and that was my next question. Why really are they teamed up, Riggs and Murtaugh?
I don't know. I always thought he got transferred for his other place. I don't know why Danny. I don't know why he needed a partner, because he said he's going to train a new partner again. Like, what happened to his other partner?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know either. And it says, like they say, you're breaking in a new partner on this. But they never say why.
Yeah, it's a good point.
Did you guys get any reason why you thought they were put together?
No, in fact, I thought a lot of what you were saying, too. I was like kind of waiting for some sort of explanation, or if there was going to be one, but yeah, never getting one. And then kind of wondered why. Well, that's odd. It's not like they were. I was trying to remember. I was like, were they once partners? And since Mel went off the rails, that's why they haven't talked. But I was like, no, this is the first time they're meeting. And I was like, okay, now I remember that. And I was like, okay, there's got to be a reason. But no, I never got one either. So I'm with you. I was kind of waiting for one, but never came through.
Hmm. It's funny that we all seem to think that. And it's just something you accept because it's Riggs and Murtaugh.
Yeah, I guess.
And it is a memorable meme. I mean, he flips them and it's your first of three. I'm too old for this shit.
Yeah.
But, The psychologist, there's a drop line about how his wife was recently killed in a car crash.
Yeah.
She was killed 3 years ago.
And that's what Kelly said. 11 years, they were married.
Mm-hmm.
So then 3 years ago, I mean, he's still like that, suicidal. You know what I mean?
Maybe that's why the captain sang what he sang.
True.
I never got that sense, and I really, this is the first time I've ever noticed it. And I can't tell, and I haven't seen the theatrical version in a long enough time to know if this was in there.
Yeah, it's a good point.
I mean, and if you don't remember, I don't know who would.
Well, I read a thing that I've never even seen. There's this uncut scene where when Mel is introduced in a bar.
I read that too.
Never saw that. I've never seen that scene in my life.
And some guys mess with him, and I guess he attacks him, and the bar owner tells him he can take a bottle of booze with him if he promises to leave.
Yeah, yeah.
Is that something you can see anywhere?
I don't remember ever seeing it. I never could find it. I don't know.
Well, and it said online that Donner wanted it cut out because he wanted you to be more sympathetic to Gibson.
Yeah,
and that made him come off as too much of like a loose cannon.
Yeah.
I don't know. Well, I did a lot of I was trying to do the math on their ages, because they meet each other and you get these, they're comparing guns, 9mm Beretta for Riggs and a 4-inch Smith & Wesson for Murtaugh. And Riggs says a lot of old timers carry those. He's calling them an old timer.
Yeah.
I was trying to decide how different in age they are because they're both Vietnam vets.
I always thought to me that
is that was the war he was in? Okay, I was trying to figure it out. Yeah. I thought, and you know what? It's now that I think about it, it's for the same reason you're mentioning it. I assumed he was supposed to be much younger than Danny Glover. So when he said, "You haven't seen one of these since the war," I'm like, "What war would he have been in for the age he's supposed to be?"
That's a darn good point.
I did some math, and it I guess it technically adds up. The war at that point had been over for 12 years. Our involvement in Vietnam is from about 1964 to 1975, and Riggs is supposed to be 50. I thought Riggs was, or Murtaugh's 50. I thought Riggs was supposed to be like 30. I read a synopsis. He's really supposed to be 37.
Oh, he is. Okay, well, then that makes sense, but I didn't know that, and I thought he was supposed to be much younger as well. I thought, like, in fact, because of the whole thing, you know, they focused on Murtaugh's age a lot in this movie, and the comments, like you said, the old timer, I thought there was like decades between the two, not just the
12 years,
13 years.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah, I always thought he was younger too, but if you do the math and read what you can read, that's about how old they're supposed to be.
Okay, well, I mean, that does make sense then. Actually, but then there's not that big of an age difference at that age. Now, if they were, you know, if Murtaugh was 30, sure, because then Riggs is a teenager, and then that's just weird. But you know,
right,
once you get past 35, it's not that big a deal.
And Murtaugh says something to him about how people think he's faking all this to draw a psycho pension, and that was what the captain's talking about. But 3 years, I mean, I don't know. Like it, I never realized so many things about this movie until watching
until
it this
time. Looked into it, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, and then like I told you about the plot. We get into the plot. It involves Vietnam and something called the Shadow Company
and drug money and drugs
and heroin they're getting from Laos and a retired general named Peter McAllister, who's like the head bad guy, and a very lucid henchman. Played by Gary Busey,
yes.
Mr. Joshua.
Yes.
But this Shadow Company really had, and they even mentioned in the movie, Air America.
Yeah.
The Shadow Company, it sounds like the direct competitor for the electric company.
Yeah. Why did you say ooh for Air America, Christy? You like that movie?
Wasn't that movie with him and
Robert Downey?
Yeah.
Was it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I'm thinking Con Air, actually, for a second there.
I thought maybe you were saying that because you were like a fan of that movie. That is a horrible movie, Chris.
Yeah, it is. No. I saw it, though.
I'd rather watch Operation
I bet you own it,
Dumbo
don't you?
Drop.
I do own that.
Yeah.
I would rather watch Tequila Sunrise.
Ooh. Michelle Pfeiffer.
Kurt Russell.
So, but this, this plot, to me, is kind of stupid and nonsensical.
There really isn't anything going on. Yeah, there's no major plot to it.
No, there, and it ties back to a Vietnam vet friend of Murtaugh's named Hunsaker, played by Tom Atkins, who every time I see him, I just think about Halloween 3.
Are you talking about Glee now?
No. Yeah. But this Hunsaker is laundering money, and they kill his daughter, the girl with the boobs, to kind of keep
as
him
opposed
in
opposed to the girl without the boobs?
Yes.
Or the guy with the boobs?
But this plot stinks.
Don't care.
And I forgot about the plot, and I think most people do.
Yeah.
You have to know about the plot to forget about it, though. That's the problem.
It's very forgettable. And if you would have said, what is the plot of Lethal Weapon? I would have been like...
That's the one where they meet, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, for Lethal Weapons 2 and 3, I can certainly tell you, I think... Well, we get to this later. I would much rather watch them and think they're better films, even though I love this.
Right.
Lethal Weapon 4 is a steaming turd, Chris.
Ah, but that's got I think that has the best final fight scene, though, with Jet Li in those two. I like that.
Yeah.
That is a good fight scene. Cool and scene. I do love Jet Li.
Yes.
But I cannot handle Chris Rock.
You like Chris Rock?
It's my baby having your baby.
Oh, yeah, baby. That is a little hard to take.
Well, Chris, you were lucky enough to meet one Mr. Gary Busey.
I did.
Just 2 weeks ago, right?
Yeah, it
wasn't that long ago. Yeah. And how did that go, Chris?
Not that good.
What happened?
I was so excited. I was in his line. He was right next to his son, Jake Busey. And I sat down next to him. He signed my poster of Lethal Weapon. I turned to him and said, "Can I ask you a question?" And he said, "Yeah." And I go, "What's your favorite 80s movie?" And he goes, "I don't know. I like them all." And that was it. That was my whole conversation with Gary Busey.
That's awesome.
He didn't ask for your endocrine system?
Nothing. And I read that he had that accident like a few months after making Lethal Weapon. Yeah.
So this is a, you know, fully functional brain Busey we're seeing in this movie.
And he's not that bad, which I still don't know how he can kick Mel's ass in this movie, to tell you the truth.
He's not that bad. How do you mean, like crazy wise?
No, he's like good. He's actually good at. I mean,
oh yeah, yeah. I was gonna say, yeah, actor. Okay, I got you.
He was good as Buddy Holly.
I was like, you need if you want a fun comparison, watch the scenes from this movie, then go watch the scenes in Predator 2, and you'll see the difference in his.
Yeah, you're right. Yes.
Well, you had
he's got a taste for meat.
You had been watching The Celebrity Apprentice a lot,
yeah.
Running up to this, and he became like kind of like a lovable idiot on Celebrity yeah. Apprentice, and I think you were expecting that lovable idiot
when I saw him. I think that was all an act on the show. He was so yeah. He had cameras on him. He was just like waiting to be filmed.
Right.
I don't know. Maybe he was just tired and old. I don't know.
Tired. He's tired.
He's tired.
Well, you got a photo with him, right?
Yeah, I mean, I did. I will post that. We found our camera, so I'll post
Chris
it.
With a big smile and Gary sneering. Yeah, fuck.
I don't know why like a mall.
Yeah.
Is that what he said?
That's it.
Did you try and ask him anything else?
Did
you ask him why he was such a prick?
My wife asked him if he could do a, what's it, like a...
A bumper?
Yes, a bumper for the Grady's. And he told her to like call like the call his people.
Call my manager.
Yeah,
we'll set it up.
But yeah. I don't fucking know who that is. You know what I mean? Talk to me. Look at me.
You know what? It's not that big of a deal.
Yeah. Well,
it was still cool though seeing someone who was in one of my favorite movies of all time. So.
Oh yeah, yeah, that is cool.
Well, good.
Too bad he was such a prick about the things he asked him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that happens.
It does. Well, let's talk about one of the probably most famous scenes in the movie is the jumper.
Oh,
jumper. Now, Matt is struggling to remember.
Oh, yes. Okay. I know what you're talking about. The guy on the building.
Yeah. And I always thought, to me, this guy looked like a Mel Gibson stunt double.
The guy, the jumper?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't get that.
Probably was.
He looked like he had the big hair going on, and he from you know from a distance it looked
it was
like
87. Everyone had that hair.
Yeah, true. Good point.
I think this is where
you
the movie
even had that hair.
I yeah. know I did. I agree.
Chris did too. Looking at it right now.
That's true. Yeah, Chris's icon on Skype has got that hair.
Well, I think this is a great point in the movie from here
awesome.
Because it really gets them going, and it's really when they start kind of messing with each other. They start arguing. They often argue about who's driving.
Yeah, I'm driving.
He's like, I'll drive.
I'm driving. Get inside the car, Riggs.
Yeah. You know, it's always the same argument.
Have a French fry.
When did Fat Albert make an appearance?
hey, get in the passenger side.
So they start messing with each other at that point. And they had just had this really kind of intense scene, and there's another one to follow.
Oh, I had that scene memorized.
Well, but Rick says to him, hey, boss, can I put the sirens on?
Yeah.
You know, and he starts to mess with them at that point, and it's where they really start to get going. It's about 35 minutes into the movie, and you love the scene.
I do.
With the jumper.
I do. It's fantastic, and it's just, it shows you, like, how awesome and quick Mel is. Like the Riggs character.
Wait, as you say, hold on
Riggs,
now.
Riggs.
Did Chris just make that, cross that line between reality and fiction?
Riggs, I'm sorry.
Does he not realize he's playing a character now? I'm getting a little worried.
I call him by his real name. But the one point that bothers me is they're up on the rooftop and it's fucking windy and the cigarette doesn't move off of that little, tiny ledge.
Oh, I thought you were going to say about the handcuffs. You always tell me about
that
the
bothers
handcuffs.
Me. Yeah, whatever.
That the handcuffs come apart.
Yeah.
And when they jump?
Oh, yeah. And then
I did notice there was quite a distance between them, but I didn't think to look for the handcuff link.
They come apart, and then you see them hold hands after it comes apart real fast.
Oh, interesting. I might go back and watch that. I like clubs like that.
And the guy didn't see the huge inflatable, you know, tarp down below them the whole time. I mean, it's worth mentioning this movie's dedicated to Dar Robinson, who's a very famous stunt person who died during the filming of the movie. And is that Dar Robinson?
Don't know. I don't know.
To stunt people, I mean, this guy's really a big deal, I know. But you love that scene, and the scene after it with Riggs and Murtaugh, where Murtaugh's really daring him now.
Threatening him, yeah.
To kill himself.
I got the job done. What do you want to hear? What do you want to hear, man? I think I'm going to eat a bullet. Well, I do. I love that scene.
You do have it memorized.
Kelly and I were watching it. I was fucking saying every goddamn word.
That sounded like what the movie would have been like if they cast Nicolas Cage as Riggs.
Oh, Cage.
Well, this is what I'm going to ask you. I ask everybody, but you know, you're the authority here. He's got the gun, you know, and he's like, puts it at his head.
He's like, no, put
it in your mouth.
Yeah.
You know, like, so he does that whole thing. Does Riggs pull the trigger?
He's doing it. Yeah. And I think Murtaugh stops him.
So what happens? He pulls the trigger.
He's pulling it down. And I think Murtaugh's hand gets in the trigger finger, and then he can't pull it down anymore.
And he says,
no, actually, I thought his thumb got caught in the hammer. Like, as it was being released. That's how I thought. I thought that's how close it was.
Whose hand? Rogers?
Murtaugh's. I think Murtaugh put his thumb right in, grabbed the gun, but the hammer actually fell on his thumb, I thought.
Ooh,
that's how close it was.
So had he not put his thumb in there, he would have blown his head off.
Yeah, that's what I thought happened.
Every single day.
Okay, I was always confused about that scene, and he doesn't, and Murtaugh says, ouch. It's like, he goes, ow. You know, it's kind of
funny.
And why
is he sweating so fucking much?
Well, it's hot.
Okay.
It was a tent intense
scene.
And
he goes,
scene.
I'm hungry. I'm going to get something
I'm
to
hungry.
Eat.
I'm going to get something to eat.
That's awesome.
It is
a great scene. It's a great line. And then he just fucking leaves.
One of the greatest on-screen duos of all time.
I totally agree.
Of course you do.
Of course you do.
That goes without saying.
Well, Matt, I mean, I know you're not a huge fan, but this is like classic film here for me, you know?
We'll wait till we get the reviews and we'll have this discussion.
This is your Metropolis.
Don't give me a quarter. Please don't give me a quarter.
Well, I think it's rare to find two actors that work so well together. And like I said, in 2 and 3, I think it gets even better. But this is like them forging really, like I said, one of the finest on-screen relationships. And in a way, it's almost romantic. Like these guys,
romance, yeah.
These guys, like, they love each other.
Yes, they do.
And they need each other.
Yes, they do.
Like, Riggs needs Murtaugh as much as Murtaugh needs Riggs. And in a way, it's kind of beautiful, like the way that they are together. They are perfect together.
It's like
together.
You and Chris.
Yeah.
I'm driving the car, Dave.
Well, and then shortly after that are my favorite scenes where they go to Murtaugh's house and his family meets Riggs. And to me, it was always touching how they just kind of adopt him.
Yeah. And you see Riggs not as crazy, you know, around his family. He just is sitting there. Soaking in the attention from his daughter, has a hots for him.
Yeah.
Because, you know, who doesn't, right?
Well, those were always my favorite scenes of any Lethal Weapon
Scott
movie.
That. Who doesn't?
My favorite scenes are the Murtaugh household scenes. And if these movies had even less action and more scenes of them sitting around the dinner table at his house, I would be happy with that because I love watching his family interact with him. And then when you throw Joe Pesci into it and the other ones, I think it even amps it up even better. Those are always my favorite scenes. I prefer those scenes to some of the action scenes.
And Murtaugh's bathroom kind of becomes a reoccurring set.
Yeah, you're right. You're
as
right,
well,
man.
You know, it's like actually some of the, well, I wouldn't say some, but I think of one really, really significant scene, at least in the second one that it appears again in.
Absolutely.
And that's where they finally, like, you can tell how much they care about each other without them saying how much they care about each other.
Mm-hmm. It's very romantic, in a way. They love each other.
Who's back there laughing?
Wow, that wasn't me.
Okay.
Like,
nor the cat that's
I mean,
in the room.
This is like Romeo and Juliet.
Romeo and Juliet.
Riggs
Romeo
and,
John.
Romeo and Johnnyet.
Now, did you guys, I guess we all watched the director's cut, there was this cut scene that I found disturbing of Riggs picking up a hooker.
Yeah, that was a cut scene. Okay, that was weird.
But to have sex with her.
Yeah, exactly.
She's 16.
But that was the disturbing part.
Yeah.
It's like when she said she was 22, she was no good. But when it was 16, okay, it's on. Regardless of the fact that they weren't having sex, that's still a little weird.
But I don't think I don't care how old she I don't think he was going to do her. No matter how old she was.
No, he was. I don't think he was going to have sex with her at all.
I think he wanted to get her off the street.
I think,
so
you know what? You're totally
turn
right.
A trick with somebody.
Yeah, yes. I could see that too, but I don't know.
Isn't that the same hooker later on in the movie? In the Umbrella. He goes again and talks to her about, have you seen this guy?
It's the same girl?
I think it's a different one.
No,
it's different.
That's an Asian girl.
Yeah, I don't think that was the same girl.
All right.
That's why he laughs and says, oh, you're a good Irish girl.
Right.
Oh, okay.
I get it.
Yeah.
Well, his sense of humor litters all of these movies, and I think
makes me wonder if it's like him, like, you know, like, is it in the script?
It's not. There's no way it can be in the script.
Yeah.
He is.
You
to
think
me,
so? Because it wasn't like full of profanity and heavy breathing.
That's real life. Stop it.
He, to me, has always, in all the movies, been a jokester and very punny and throws his little
one-liners.
He's almost like Popeye. He says things under his breath, and he says it under his breath.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
It's especially
wow,
the best one.
I think that's the first time you've ever made me lower my head, Dave.
just nod back and forth going, wow.
We're never going to
think Lethal Popeye.
Yes. We're never going to do Lethal Weapon 3, but the best one is with him and Rene Russo. And to me, he's like Bill Murray, like Bill Murray in Ghostbusters pulls the wreck in that room, and he pulls the tablecloth. The flowers are still standing.
Yeah.
There's no way somebody wrote that shit down.
No, he just film it.
So Riggs is talking to Rene Russo, and they're arguing back and forth, and she's like, he's getting her going, and she's like, "Are you baiting me?" You remember the scene?
A little bit.
"Yes, I'm a master of that."
Yeah.
That's all Mel Gibson.
God, yeah.
Shane Black is a punk.
It's all Mel. Mel made these movies.
Oh, God. Let's move on. Next scene.
Well, I never took it that he was just being nice and getting her off the street. I took it as he's still in mourning for his wife and wants the comfort of watching TV with a woman.
I like both.
I didn't think anything even remotely sexual, but I just thought it was the age thing was weird to me. I didn't quite understand what that was about. I think I certainly missed what they were trying to do there.
Yeah. Well, getting into the plot deeper and deeper without getting into too much detail, they go to see Hunsaker, and Mr. Joshua kills Hunsaker. Joshua tries to kill Riggs. They kidnap his daughter, Rianne. Is that her name?
I think so, yeah.
Did you see the note?
Yeah.
That's nasty. You remember what it said?
I don't, but I think that's the first time I ever read it was when I saw it last night.
Yeah, I paused it to read through what it says. It's like a ransom note.
What's it say? Something nasty.
It says, "Your daughter looks really pretty naked."
You're right. Yep.
And there's a Polaroid.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. I remember that now. Yeah.
That's kind of.
Yes.
How old is she supposed to be? Like 17? She's in high school.
I guess so, yeah.
Okay. I never noticed that either. See, you should have, if you're listening out there and you like movies, you should start a podcast and you'll learn lots of things.
You'll pay more attention to your movies.
Yeah, but it's double-edged swords. There's a couple of movies we thought we loved that we're probably never going to watch again because of this podcast.
That's true.
Good point.
And I blame Christy because they're all ones that she probably brought up.
What?
I'm just kidding. So Riggs and Murtaugh are eventually, you know, captured. And enter Mr. Ian Endo. You love Mr. Endo, don't you?
He should do conventions. Christ, man.
You would like to meet him?
I would.
Okay.
He's still alive. I didn't even know he's still alive.
Who, Al Young? I think he's still alive.
Yeah.
The guy with the beard and the long hair?
Yeah. Genghis Khan, like, from Bill and Ted.
He's like the thug in every movie ever made. Yeah. I think he's still alive.
Well, the torture scene is pretty cool, and they're also torturing Murtaugh, and why does he say, "Go spit"?
No idea.
Yeah,
cause,
I know.
He's,
you know,
spitting.
What's funny? That's so funny you said that, because I remember, as soon as I saw this scene, I was like, oh, this is where they edited for TV, and they said, "Go spit." That's so stupid. And then I see it on DVD saying it. I was like, wow, that was the original line?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it does seem like a bad Yippee-ki-yay, Mr. Mm-hmm. Falcon TBS version of...
In the opening, when at the holiday tree scene, this is a real badge and it's a real fucking gun. Mm-hmm. And on the TV version, it's a real firing gun. I remember that.
Watching these on TV sometimes is a lot of fun.
True.
Now, Chris, do you remember
years
and years ago, we made a movie called Die Hard with Butter Flavoring, and we started playing with scenes for a sequel, and you and I reenacted part of this scene in a sense, and you said, "Go spit" in it?
I do not.
Oh, I think I still have that. I'll put that on there. Well, maybe not, because I'm really, look, it's ridiculous in that. But I like
when I said,
like,
"Go spit."
We take the same idea. It's like I'm torturing you. It's like first I start with salt, And then it's like the objects get weirder and weirder.
I remember that.
Shampoo, then like an oil can, and yeah, at one point you're like, go spit. I might put it up somewhere just for you to see.
I don't know if I'll post it
for the world to see.
He says it in the other movies too, doesn't he?
He does.
Is that like one of his?
That's his catchphrase.
He has a catchphrase of "go spit" and "I'm too old for this shit." And then
I'm driving a car.
When he's about to kill somebody, he stretches his neck
and
out.
And he cracks his neck. Yeah.
I think he did that in Predator too.
McAllister, prepare to die. One shot, doink.
Well, and the way Riggs kills Mr. Endo is really cool with the water porn.
Kill the both of you.
Maybe so.
That's where he was not improvising. That's where the natural Mel came out, the heavy breathing and the threatening to kill people.
Yeah.
That's the real Mel.
Man, we're not filming yet. Oh, I'm sorry.
That is a great scene, though. He's so physical.
He's awesome.
He's so visceral. He's like Mel Gibson and Bruce Willis. To me, as much as I love Stallone, amped these movies up because they were more believable.
Totally agree.
They were like the anti-Stallone and Schwarzenegger, just their build and their attitude. It was like a new breed of action movies that would even drip down to people like Patrick Swayze, and we did Roadhouse. Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, maybe it's because he is a little guy or whatever. He looks like us.
Yeah, I mean, just every ordinary person out there, yeah.
Well, and maybe not us.
And I think the... The line about one shepherd say to another shepherd was all ad-libbed.
Yeah.
Guaranteed.
That's totally his, it seems to be his sense of humor.
And I still, that's one thing I say to this day still.
You do? Yeah, I remember you, I always heard you say that more than once in the past. Yeah.
And he chases Mr. Joshua on foot, which also becomes a running gag.
But he has on shoes and like the whole other scenes in the movie.
He has shoes on there.
I thought he's barefoot or no.
That's called Die Hard.
No, he was barefoot when he was getting tortured.
He puts on Reeboks.
I think you're right. Okay. All right. Because he jumps off that fence onto those rocks. Ouch.
Right. Well, this is all building up to the Joshua Riggs throwdown.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Two crazy sons of bitches. What?
Well, I want to hear what her god was about.
This fight is completely unnecessary.
Go on.
They had him. He had no gun. Murtaugh even has his hands up.
But
he was like, he could have cuffed him and just taken care of it right there.
But no. He asked him. Do you want to shout the title? Don't mind if I do. Come on now.
Here's another flash from the past. Do you remember at the theater, and both of you guys were involved in this, we had that stupid game that had like no rules where we just throw cup lids at each other in the hallway?
Hell yeah.
And at one point we had like our own set of lids and we wrote catchphrases on them. That was your catchphrase on your lid.
What, mine?
Yep. Do you want a shot at the title?
No!
Yes, it was.
God,
there can be only one, and yours was you want a shot at the title.
You got a fucking great memory, man.
I remember shit like that. Unfortunately, that's about all the kinds of category of stuff I remember.
When's my birthday?
It was this year. This year.
Well, that's become sort of a catchphrase. Do you want a shot at the title? In fact, I was at home this afternoon. My son had thrown on the Tooth Fairy. With The Rock, and there's a fight scene between The Rock and Stephen Merchant, and The Rock says to him, "Do you want a shot at the title?"
See, you're totally right. It's a useless scene, but you have to just have Mel unleash, you know, his rage.
It's like unleash hell / unleash Mel.
Yeah.
No, but
thank you, Christy.
Wait, this is the scene where I was like, holy crap, there's water coming from the sky again. What the hell is it? Everything that there's like rain every few scenes, and there's a hydrant going off.
Yeah, how'd that? Oh, because the cops got died.
The car crashed.
The cops killed and then they crashed. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Well, they drove the car through the window.
They did that.
Yeah.
I would never drive a house. I mean, a car in my house.
Whatever car Busey hijacked the driver in is the one that hit the fire hydrant.
No, that was a cop car.
No, was it?
Yeah,
it was a cop car.
Two cop cars died.
My mistake. Then.
Cops died.
I'll cut that out.
Edit it out.
Well, most people disagree with Christy, even though I actually happen to agree with Christy.
She is right.
What? This is pointless, but most people, especially fight scene fans, action fans, will say this is one of the all-time fight scenes in a movie ever.
Yeah, it's... Come on, 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 come on.
What?
What? That was
there's,
awesome.
There's the opener.
And that scissor hold at the end is pretty famous.
It's,
I mean,
it's awesome, but does who picks up the traffic light or the street light and starts swinging it?
The traffic light.
The big light in the yard. Isn't that like the big pole?
Busey starts swinging something at him. I didn't know what it was.
Isn't that like a light or something?
And then Murtaugh throws Riggs a baton to block it.
Yeah, which, you know, I doubt that would happen.
So Christy and I are saying, kind of stupid, you love it. Where's Matt coming down on this?
I think you love it behind closed doors.
It didn't need to be in a movie, but I did like the scene. But, you know, it's like if they would have ended the movie before that, I still would have felt it ended just fine. So it wasn't necessary, but I do like it.
Yeah.
All right. So 2-2. Well, really, 3-1. It's dumb.
It's useless. It's dumb, but you got to see just Mel just, you know, wah, just snap out and do shit.
Maybe my problem with it is because I hated the plot so much, and even though Gary Busey was creepy because he got his arm burned and didn't seem to care, maybe people needed to see that payoff because, like, Gary Busey's nuts and so is Riggs, but I didn't care enough about the plot or the bad guys to need to see that fight.
I always thought it was funny that he was trying to drown him in a puddle.
No! That was, yeah.
It may take him out, Riggs.
No!
You whore.
You stop this fight, I'll kill you.
So, it's stupid, but cool to watch.
All right. Well, you know, that's pretty much it. I mean, he shows up at the house again, which I'm always happy about. And I guess it's Christmas Day, isn't it?
I guess so, yeah.
Because he ends up having Christmas dinner with them, which is perfect because anything that gets those two guys together.
And he brings a friend.
I'm happy. Yes, and he brings his friend.
This is always me. I love dogs.
And doesn't your dog resemble Riggs's dog?
Sam, yes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Was that intentional?
No, it was not. It was not.
Okay. But he gives Murtaugh the bullet, the very bullet that he had specially set aside to blow his head off.
Yeah.
Nice.
I don't even think, you know, it's weird. And all the rest, he's not even as crazy. Like in 2, he's not crazy until the girl dies. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, he's crazy for half an hour.
Right. Well, and that's pretty much it, except for, I know Chris is one of Chris's favorite parts and my parts, the closing credit song performed by Honeymoon Suite. Is that right?
I believe so.
Let's hear it, Chris.
You lose love.
This song's so bad.
And it makes your life turn cold.
Such a horrible song.
It is so bad. But I remember this. Oh, Christ. I used to look for this soundtrack year after year after year, and I found it in South Carolina, Myrtle Beach, on vacation. I was so fucking ecstatic.
On tape.
It made your vacation,
I think so.
Didn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We haven't mentioned the music, but it's worth mentioning. Michael came in, God rest his soul, and David Sanborn and Eric Clapton. This is Lethal Weapon music has become pretty distinguishable to go with the movie. A lot of saxophone along with the guitar. But this song is just horrible, but it's become, I know at least for you and for me, even kind of a guilty pleasure. It's so bad. I remember driving around in your car listening to this crap.
It sounds like a dumb Rocky kind of song, you know?
Nothing's dumb about Rocky.
I'm sorry, dude.
This sounds like the song Rocky should have been walking around a snowy park right after his trainer died, too.
Aww.
Yeah.
That even love can become a lethal weapon.
Oh, God.
Wow. All right.
Sing along, Chrissy.
My Davey made me shake my head twice in one episode.
And there is an alternate ending, which is on the, it's online, and it's on the Lethal Weapon 4 sound, or CD, or DVD, and it's horrible.
It is.
It's just kind of them walking out to a car, and he's like, Riggs, I think I'm going to retire, and he just goes, don't do it.
And he drives away.
And that's it. That's basically it. I mean, him giving in that bullet is pretty symbolic and solidifies their relationship. I mean, I've said it several times. I love these guys together. And that's a pretty big deal to me. him giving him that bullet and just carries on to the next two.
You think his craziness after his wife, he went to his wife's grave and said, "I love you, Victoria Lynn." Think he says goodbye to her then?
That's the way they make it seem. He's in mourning, and maybe he's done mourning. He's put it past him.
And he's a new family who cares for him now and shit, I guess.
Yep. Oh, well.
Great song.
Great song. I guess we're ready at this point now to go through it and see what we really thought about this. We're going to give our initial review from our initial viewing versus our viewing for this podcast. And we're going to save Chris for last, even though I don't know why we're bothering. But Christy, let's start with you.
Be gentle.
Did Lethal Weapon hold up after all these years, if it ever held up at all for you?
I have to say I didn't hate this movie.
Duh.
It's not. It's no Rush Hour, but.
Oh my god! How can you even compare the two?
But I did. I do like it, and I do enjoy that relationship between Riggs and Murtaugh. So I do agree with you on that. And I actually one of our first dates was going to the fourth one. So in that way, I kind of have a soft spot for the series. So probably my initial viewing, seeing it on TV, I'd give it a 2 because it got a lot edited out. But seeing the full version, nay, the director's cut, thanks, Chris.
You're welcome.
I would give it a 3.5.
Nice.
That's good. That's...
All right, well,
pretty good.
Let's hear what Matt has to say.
Okay, well, unfortunately, I saw the second one before this, so I didn't like it as much as the second one, so I'm going to say my first viewing, however long ago that was, is probably at about a 3.5. And Chris, I'm sorry, I hope this doesn't offend you, but I hope you understand. This watching it this time, it had the same problems that Rocky did as far as age. It's just the way it was made. Oh my God! How much Family Feud was there in this movie? I mean, like, you know, references.
Yeah, I told Kelly that. Yeah,
things that are long gone, and I mainly this one. What one thing that was like really stood out for this one was like the overdubbing. It's like the when the they went from, you know, the actual film sound to re-records. It was so obvious and painful. I had to drop it down just because how well it didn't age on that merit and go with a 3 this viewing.
Man, you're just stupid. You know what you're talking about. I hate you.
Okay, that's fair.
No, that's you're fine. That's makes sense.
All right. Well, I'm going to go next. We'll save Chris for last. But like I said, with Matt, I caught up late with the Lethal Weapon, getting ready for number 3. So I at least saw it by 1992. I saw it in the early 90s, and I did like it, not as much as 2, like Matt said, or even 3. But I don't know how much Joe Pesci had to do with that, because I really did like what he added to the Lethal Weapon series.
Yeah.
Not in 4. I can't.
Yeah, 4, he's annoying in 4.
I can't get behind.
Yeah, he
4.
Was terrible in 4.
But in 2 and 4,
the
it's
character,
like,
I mean.
Yeah, he's the same character, but why is he annoying in 4 and good in 2? That's
yeah,
that's
I don't
weird.
Know.
I loved him in 2 and 3. And I loved their dynamic from going from 2 guys to 3 guys. It didn't bother me because you still got your Riggs and Murtaugh scenes. And then when he was around, they were joining forces against him anyway. But so maybe that had something to do with it. But I still did like it a lot. He was just so cool. And I really, my intro to Mel Gibson, I hadn't seen Road Warrior or anything in that. But I was in a Joel Silver mindset back then. So pretty much anything that had the Joel Silver Pictures emblem at the
logo,
end of it,
yeah.
I was loving. So I'm going to give it a 4 out of 5 in the early 90s. Watching it now, I kind of dropped it, but not much. This plot stinks. But to me, it holds up because of their relationship. And like I said, it will only get better. The action still holds up, I think. But I would, like I said, much rather see them hanging out at Murtaugh's, you know, making fun of his wife's cooking, all that kind of stuff. I love the way they really start to get into each other in Lethal Weapon 2 with his daughter doing the condom commercial.
Yeah.
I mean, that kind of stuff I just love. Because I think that's what dudes do. They bust on each other. And nobody does it better than these guys. So I dropped it only slightly, also to a 3.5 out of 5. But to me, it definitely holds up. But if you have a choice, don't watch the director's cut. Watch the theatrical cut. Because those 7 minutes, to me, I'm glad they were gone, and I don't want to see them again. All right, Chris. Shock us all.
Okay, 1987 came out. I think I saw it on HBO. I maybe even saw it after I saw part two. I'm only giving it a 4 because, you know, I was young and didn't really know what was going on, probably, and didn't really care about Lethal Weapon very much. Watching it 4,000 times after that and yesterday, I don't give a shit. I give it a 5. It's what made me fall in love with Mel. It's what made me fall in love with him and his acting and the action movies that he's done.
This dreamy butt.
And that too.
All right, so going across the board, it sounds to me like Lethal Weapon certainly holds up.
Well, I think this movie is what every movie after it, every buddy cop thing, the Rush Hours, and Money Talks, whatever, anything, they always try to team up a black guy and a white guy. Try to redo this kind of movie.
You don't think 48 Hours had anything to do with that?
No.
You're not giving 48 Hours an ounce of credit?
Walter Hill, no. I'm not.
I'm a little surprised because I think you like that too, don't you?
I do. But it's not, no. Because one's, you know, they're both not cops.
Okay. All right. So I guess if you're going by whether or not we think this holds up, Lethal Weapon does hold up. So congratulations, Chris. You were successful in your panelist pick.
I'm actually shocked that you guys were really hard on it and really over top of what he's done lately.
No, we leave that kind of stuff for you.
I want to thank you
on our choices.
I want to thank you for being easy.
All right. Well, that means it's time for our top five list. And our top five list this week is going to be our straight up top five movie cops.
Now, this was a hard one again to do.
Because there's so many to choose from?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. This was a hard one because I didn't watch a lot of cop movies.
I didn't think it was going to be that hard until I started making a list, and I had way too many. I had to cut some off.
I know. That was the hardest part.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll start as we always do with the lovely and talented Christy. Christy, from 5 to 1, she's just going to go straight through the list. We all are. What are your top five cops?
My number 5 is Don't Put a Banana in the Tailpipe, Axel Foley.
Awesome.
My number 4 is something that... Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Go ahead, Christy. I'm just gonna
my number
play this
4, in your honor, Dave, Nick Angel in Hot Fuzz. I do like him in that movie. And like I said, it was kind of hard for me to find cop movies that... I don't like serious movies, so it was hard to find ones that I've actually seen. My number 3 is Captain Gordon in The Dark Knight.
Ooh. I had considered him, and I'm glad somebody else had him on there.
I adore that man. So, number 2 for me would be Detective Inspector Lee, Jackie Chan in Rush Hour.
You love those Rush Hour movies, don't you?
I did. The first one.
Okay.
The first one, not even the second one. And the third one, I'd like to pretend it didn't exist. And my number 1 is a classic, Sheriff Bart in Blazing Saddles.
Oh, that's a good one. Damn.
There is one I'm going to wait until it's over that I could have sworn was going to be on your list, and it wasn't.
Uh-huh.
Let's bring it up.
Marshall Willenholly?
And no.
Why do you choose Jackie Chan over Chris Tucker? I mean, I'm not questioning your list. I'm just interested.
I find Jackie Chan less annoying.
Uh-huh.
I have a certain like tolerance. You know, like when you eat a lot of sugar and you get to the point where you can't eat any more sugar? That's the way I feel about Chris Tucker. Like sometimes when I'm watching now it's gone out of my brain. My favorite.
Fifth Element.
When I'm watching The Fifth Element, I actually have to mute the television.
That's the one part I don't like about that movie.
I'm like, Chris Tucker. Go. And he does that to me in Rush Hour as well. That I just, I can't hear him go, eeny, meeny. I got to turn him off. That's what the mute button is for. I like to instead call it my Chris Tucker button.
All right. Matt.
My Christy button, but it doesn't work.
Ooh. Shut up.
Ooh. All right, Matt, what's your top 5 list?
Okay, well, here's the first of 2 matches to my wife's list, although I have him listed as a lieutenant, not a captain. I put Lieutenant James Gordon from Batman Begins.
Very nice.
Nice.
I think lieutenant.
He was promoted at the end of the movie.
Okay, sorry then. Yes. That's one of those movies where I saw that Gary Oldman was going to play him, and I was like, what? And then ended up really liking him. So.
Yeah.
Next one, I think Chris will be the only one that has my back on this. Officer Alexander James Murphy. Alexander James Murphy.
Holy shit.
RoboCop.
RoboCop.
My number three will leave no warehouse, farmhouse, henhouse, outhouse, or doghouse overturned.
Yes!
Deputy Sam Gerard in The Fugitive.
Man, I should have known.
My number two, which is also my second match with my wife, is Nicholas Angel from Hot Fuzz. And you guys may have guessed number one. If you hadn't, it'll make perfect sense. I had to put Detective Frank Drebin from The Naked Gun.
Now that is who I thought would be on her list.
Oh, didn't make it.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, I thought both your lists would be like mostly comedy guys, like Frank Drebin or, you know, Jim Dangle from Reno 911 or things like that.
That would have been a good one, too, yeah.
I thought it was going to be all funny dudes. You guys had two that were the same, didn't you?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Nice.
That was a good list.
Yes.
Thank you.
All right, Chris. It's your turn. Let's hear it.
One of mine, number five, is Matt already said it. RoboCop.
Is that your impression?
It is. Your move, creep. It's one of my guilty pleasure movies that, you know, I love it.
I love the first RoboCop.
Yeah. Number four is a character that probably my father got me into watching, and I love it to this day, is Harry Callahan, Dirty Harry.
Oh, yeah.
Go ahead.
That's a good choice.
I've never seen any of those movies.
No, it's, you know, they're not that good, but just it's just he just goes around with his big ass 44 Magnum.
That would be interesting to do because they didn't hold up when they were aired.
No,
I mean, they were already, everything in those were so trendy and stylish that by the time that was done editing and released, everything was out of style. So watching them now would drive you really funny.
My favorite's Sudden Impact with Jim Carrey.
No, he was in Deadpool.
A Deadpool?
Yeah.
As Axl Rose kind of person?
Yeah, he lip-synced Welcome to the Jungle.
Yeah. But
I saw part of that one. That was the only one I saw.
I do love the one. Sudden Impact is my favorite Dirty Harry film. All right, number three, I already said, I think from Christy, Axel Foley.
You love Axel
Foley. I love Beverly Hills Cop. Hint, hint. Next pick selection.
No, I'll be sitting out on that one.
What?
I can't stand that.
What, but Beverly Hills Cop?
I hate it.
You're lying.
To me, he's done so many other better things than that.
Cop movie wise?
Yeah, like Haunted Mansion.
Norbit.
Meet the Clumps.
I love it for two reasons. It's an awesome action cop movie, and he just is so fucking hysterical in the role.
And Bronson Pinchot.
And I always think it's weird that Stallone was supposedly the first pick for that role, which I don't know how that would happen.
They said that about this. I do the research. They said that it was supposed to be Bruce Willis's Riggs. It's like, I can't believe half the stuff that I read about that kind of crap.
True. All right, number two. Is, you know, it's so obvious. Hopefully it's on Dave's list, but I don't know. John McClane, Die Hard. Duh. Come on now.
Duh.
Duh. And, you know, what did we just do? Number one, Martin Riggs.
He's your number
one. I'm so fucking easy. I mean, I almost was going to ask you guys to tell me my top five list.
Well, your one and two I had pegged, that was for sure.
Yeah, I mean, it was so simple. But there's a bunch of that I wanted to put on, but nah. Riggs and McClane, come on.
Well, I think I do. I usually do what Matt does and kind of excuse the thing that we're talking about.
Yeah.
To give myself another pick on the list. But you could not bring yourself to do that for this, could you?
I can't, but come on. Stop it.
I was going to say, I didn't have to do that this time. Sorry, Chris. I'm just kidding. Well, no, I'm not, but you know what I mean.
You're not really.
No, I'm not kidding. I didn't have to do that, but never mind. Go ahead, Dave.
Never mind.
All right, well, I had a hard time making this list, too. I got a ton of people written down, had to narrow it down to five. It was rough, but I think it was successful. Starting with my number five is Detective John Moss as played by James Woods in The Hard Way.
Oh, I remember how much you loved that movie.
I love that movie.
Yeah.
Why are you saying it all accusatory?
It just reminded me of how much you loved that movie.
Only thing I remember from that is the cigarette throwing in the mouth scene.
Oh, right. Yeah. I love that movie. It's, to me, one of the most underrated movies of the 90s. It, to me, was good, more good chemistry in this case between Woods and Michael J. Fox. And Woods' frustration during that whole movie was just unbelievable. I love him anyway. I think he's always good, but I love him especially in that movie. It was kind of a different take on the buddy cop thing. One of them not being a cop, but I really love The Hard Way.
It's been a long time since.
If you haven't seen The Hard Way, you gotta check it out. And we probably should have mentioned spoilers, but I feel like that's pretty redundant. I mean, you're listening to a podcast about movies. If you haven't seen these movies, what are you waiting for? So
get out there.
You know, spoilers. And there's always spoilers on these things. So whatever. Number four is Christy's going to like this. Sheriff Freddie Heflin, as played by Sylvester Stallone.
Oh, God.
In Copland. Why are you laughing?
No reason.
I almost made a whole Stallone list. Just
I remember
for
you saying this, yeah.
I was going to go straight through him. I was going to go Sergeant John Spartan from Demolition Man and Lieutenant.
Is he not on your list?
No.
Oh, he was my number six. I was going to mention that, but I was like, wait, Dave might have that on the list. I don't want to spoil that.
No, I was going to do Ray Tango, Marion Cobretti.
Nice little potty break.
But I decided not to. But to me, number four, Sergeant Freddie Heflin. If you haven't seen Copland, what are you waiting for? You got to see Copland. He is so great in that. Puts on the pounds and just is a desperate character full of heartbreak and inadequacy and finally redemption, but he's just a disappointment to everybody, including himself. And Copland is a great movie, and he's one of the reasons why. Have you seen Copland, Christy?
She hasn't.
That's horrible. You got to see Copland.
Why?
I think that
I still have my tonsils. Why do I have to see Copland?
See, that one is one that I think you could get on board with, because it's not at all a Stallone movie at all. He's so against the type that you see him as. He's heartbreaking. You got to watch it.
No, it's too late. Her mind's too jaded. Trust me, Dave. That's not going to work.
He even in the movie listens to a Springsteen record, and if you're a Springsteen fan, I mean, there's like kind of like a mindset for some Springsteen songs. He is a Springsteen song in that movie.
You're not selling it to me right now.
Oh, what a great movie. Please, someone out there, set this woman straight.
Post on Facebook if you like Copland.
I've been saying that every day for 12 years. Yeah. What do you think one podcast is going to do?
All right.
How's the couch feeling?
All right. Well, my number three then is Detective William Somerset, as played by Morgan Freeman. And Seven. Now, this is another desperate man. This is a man that's seeing the horrors of life, and he never lets it get to him, except in the case that he works on with Brad Pitt. He's really, and Brad Pitt does a fine job in the movie too. But Morgan Freeman is
what's in the box?
What's in the box?
He's just unbelievable, and he's really teaching him how to become a better cop and really a better man. And nothing gets to him except in the end. And if you haven't seen Seven, I guess you should turn this off now. But even Detective William Somerset loses his cool in the mind-blowing end of Seven when he slaps John Doe. You remember that?
No, it's been a long time since Seven.
All right. Go watch that now.
That's Dave's reasoning on his own stuff.
Go. You watch that. She watches Copland. And we'll see what Matt has to watch. And I'll watch Rush Hour or whatever the hell.
No, you'll watch it. You'll watch something even girlier.
Oh, okay. Well, we'll get to that in a minute.
I do believe there was a Pride and Prejudice during that time.
Oh, so. God, no.
Was there?
I think they refilmed. Well, they refilm Pride and Prejudice every freaking year, so.
Yeah. Well, good. Maybe we'll be watching that next. But first,
can't wait.
Moving on to my number two. My number two is really one of the finest performances I've ever seen. And it's Detective Alonzo Harris, as portrayed by Denzel Washington in Training Day. His finest performance in his Oscar-winning performance. I could watch this movie every day. Is there a better performance than this?
He's great in that movie.
You find me one and we'll talk, because there's nothing better than this guy in this movie. So great. Enough said.
I would have to say Debbie Gibson in Crocosaur or whatever that one was.
Crocosaur. Yeah.
And that leads to my number one, and Chris, you'll be happy, because my number one is Lieutenant John McClane.
Awesome.
As portrayed by Bruce Willis in Die Hard. And Die Hard 2 squeezed into the 80s as well.
So I like Die Hard 2, actually.
I love all the Die Hards, actually. I mean, even the last one, I found some merits. But third one, good. Second one, great. First one, greatest action movie ever made. And he is just unbelievable, just like kind of like Mel Gibson was in this. It's the vulnerability and the sense of humor. The scene of him in the bathroom when he's picking the glass out of his feet and really pleading to, you know, what's his face from Family Matters,
Sergeant Al Powell.
Really telling his telling him what he's going to tell his wife after he's dead. He knows he's going to die.
Matt, I don't know if you were in drama class with me.
Yes, I was.
Do you remember this?
Yes, that was your final monologue.
Yeah.
What?
The scene from Die Hard in the bathroom.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's where we met, actually, was in that class.
I think you're right.
Yeah.
I did this whole scene.
She's the best thing that ever happened to a bum like me.
Yeah, yeah.
You tell her that. You got that, man?
I had the whole thing memorized, and I was up. I don't know if I was doing the same scene. Was I?
Were you pretending like you were picking glass out of your feet?
I forget.
You were doing the same scene, and you had the T-shirt that you marked up with like a red marker or some kind of red paint, the tank top and the shorts, and you were barefoot.
Yep.
And the curtains narrowed down the hallway length and a spotlight on you. Yeah, I remember that.
You tell her John said he was sorry.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Great acting, great action.
It's Bruce.
Greatest movie cop of all time and the greatest action movie of all time.
I'm surprised that's not on your list yet, Dave. You're going to pick Die Hard yet.
Well, maybe I'm saving it like you did.
Okay.
Speaking of saving, we get to hear what Christy's going to make us watch next. This should be good.
Matt, do you want to give
me? No.
You know,
no.
I want hints. I want movie. I want poster titles.
You want a hint?
I want to try to guess it.
See, I was. I don't know.
Well, the hint I was going
to
give probably won't give it away because I didn't know it existed till then. But the edition we just purchased and watched contains a pilot episode of the series based off it. And it is literally, and I mean this from the bottom of my heart, it is the worst television I've ever seen in my life.
How many copies of this movie?
Almost unwatchable.
How many copies of this movie do you own now?
One.
Just
okay.
The only one it's just really the only one we own. Yeah.
I've never been able to find it before.
Give me a year.
So it was a TV show?
No. They made a pilot. It never aired. Thank God. But the pilot is on this edition of the DVD we just got, and it is the worst TV I've ever seen. It's just that bad.
All right. So,
I hope you guys get this edition so we can discuss the pilot, because the pilot is worth discussing.
The pilot is worth discussing. Yes.
Think of movies.
Boy Meets World. No.
You might get it from this. One of the principal bad guys is now on a series of credit card commercials.
Good. That's a nice
series
one.
Thank you. Credit card commercials.
Is it
Dennis Haysbert? No, that's health insurance.
What's in your wallet? Those ones?
Oh, yeah. Chris is on the right path.
Alec Baldwin?
No.
Yeah, but
no, one of the principal bad guys.
The only people I know is the Viking. What's in your wallet?
Oh, you were getting close. You were so close.
Revenge of the Nerds.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Get the panty raid edition. That's the one we got.
Well, I got a DVD with Basher Party, and Nerds is on it, too.
And you have the panty raid edition.
Who does?
You do. That's the one that's on there.
Okay.
It's a picture of the dork holding up like a pair of panties.
That is the one with the horrible, awful pilot on it.
Well, maybe you can see it. I think I hate this movie.
But some really interesting that there was a whole documentary on it as well, but it was interesting because they
It was interesting to you.
It was interesting to me.
Don't speak for the rest of the world.
What's funny is that I think Dave called me. He was out in the store and he found this thing and he bought it for me for Bachelor Party.
Oh,
I, on our last podcast, and I watched Bachelor Party. How did I watch it?
You did you borrow? Did I get it out of the library or something?
I think so.
It was kind of hard to find
because I still have that copy over here unopened, still sealed up. But now
I paid for it on demand. Bachelor Party. I don't know how.
So
you
did I
it.
Think.
Yeah, I think we both paid
but
for
I
it.
I think it's after it's already you bought it or whatever. But no, I'll open it now to watch Nerds. I was actually watching iCarly a couple days ago, and Ted McGinley was on.
And Booger's been on there too, right?
Yeah, yep. He has. Yeah,
and it's actually directed by Timothy Busfield, who was Poindexter.
Oh well, if it's a Busfield project, you know it's good.
What's directed by him?
iCarly.
Oh, okay.
I thought you were talking about Revenge of the Nerds.
Yeah, I was like,
iCarly is directed by the guy who was Booger, or who was Poindexter, and was on 30 something, the redhead.
Yeah.
This is going to be rough.
You know why? Because I hated Porky's. And this one's, I don't know.
Do you see me, Karen? Or
I can't see you.
You see me with a little tear?
Well, I have not seen it. I can't say that I've seen it. I've probably seen parts of it. Here and there, but this will be my initial viewing.
And that was so obvious for her. That's one that we picked last time for her.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. All right. Well,
you will be chanting the rap as well.
No.
It's very singable.
Clap your hands. Is that the one?
Clap your hands, everybody. Everybody, clap your hands. We're Lambda, 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 and Omega Moon.
At the same convention, I saw Gary Busey. In the same room was three nerds.
Mm-hmm.
I walked right past.
Oh, there's
them.
Probably a lot of nerds.
Yeah, three nerds and the movie nerds, I guess.
Oh, okay. I
can't even tell you. I know one was the black guy. I don't know his name.
He was in Karate Kid.
Yeah, and there was two more, but I don't know who they were there.
He actually had a career and did like Solar Babies and other 80s stuff. And
I love how you say he had a career and then say he did Solar
he
Babies.
Did Solar
you're
Babies.
Not proving your point.
Well, he's
not
one of
much
the
of a career.
He's one of the Cobra Kai, the black nerd,
and really?
Karate Kid. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
The other nerds I can't vouch for, but all right.
all right.
That's all right. I'm gonna make her pay with my choice. And you guys are going to love it. I'm finally going to find something that three quarters of us enjoy.
Yes. Yeah.
All right. Well,
Poops the movie.
I would like to thank you for listening to The Gradies, The Great 80s Movie Debate. You can visit us on our website at gradies.neozaz.com. You can also find us on Facebook. And yes, we will be appearing at Wizard World Philadelphia in... Really, not too long. June 17th, 18th, and 19th, we'll be there and accosting people, talking about 80s movies. We'll also probably be there talking about one of our other podcasts, Star Wars in Character. If you're an 80s movie fan, you must be a Star Wars fan. If you're not, don't listen to this anymore. go on swic.neozaz.com or find us on Facebook as well. For Star Wars in Character, we take a different Star Wars character every week. And kind of discuss them as much as anyone can. I mean, we're talking the side characters. Like, we're talking characters that are in it for 20 seconds and under, some of these people. So go on there and you can find that. We're on iTunes for both of those. And also under the NeoZazz podcast channel is the Trailer Pod Boys, where you can catch up on all of the things that have been happening on the cult Canadian television show. So thank you again for listening to our Lethal Weapon podcast. And join us next time as we will be discussing Revenge of the Nerds.
Oh, boy.
That was a good
That was pretty good.
Was that Christy?
That was me.
She's so proud.